This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, I'm Ian Hanemansing. Welcome to Checkup's Ask Me Anything podcast about Pierre Poilievre, the person, the politician, and quite possibly the next prime minister.
We have a common sense plan to axe the tax, build the homes, fix the budget, and stop the crime.
We will close safe injection sites. They're drug dens, and they've made everything worse.
When will we put an end to this wacko policy by this wacko prime minister?
This week, Prime Minister Trudeau survived another attempt by Pierre Poilievre to bring down the government through a non-confidence motion. The Conservative leader has made it clear he wants an election as soon as possible, and the polls have given him lots of motivation to push for one. According to CBC's poll tracker, the Conservatives have almost a 20-point lead over the governing Liberals, and that lead's been holding steady for months. We know there will be an election before 2025, though it could come sooner. So with that possibility on the horizon, we wanted to take stock of who Pierre Poilievre is and what a possible Poilievre government might look like. And while we've invited Pierre Poilievre to be on Cross Country Checkup many times over the past year, he's not accepted our invitation. Instead, we have two Ottawa journalists to answer questions in our AMA. Shannon Proudfoot is a feature writer at the Globe and Mail, and Stephanie Levitz is a senior politics reporter at the Globe. They answered questions about the Conservative Party leader. Here are a few highlights from the show. Shannon, you wrote a profile of Poilievre for Maclean's magazine back in 2022, one of the few long-form interviews that he's done so far. What did you learn about his childhood and the impact it's had on him as an adult as you worked on that piece?
Yeah, when you start looking back at his early years, what emerges is sort of how astonishingly consistent he's been in his political views. So he grew up, was raised in Preston Manning's Calgary Southwest riding, which was later represented by Stephen Harper. So there's some real solid kind of political DNA there in where he grew up. And when I asked him where his political beliefs came from, I'm always sort of interested to find out why people believe what they believe, because usually it's not really an intellectual position. Usually it's something that's kind of rooted in their biography. And what he said was that he was born to a teenage mom who was unwed and not able to care for him and placed him for adoption. And he was adopted by two Saskatchewan school teachers. So he said his starting point for his political beliefs, kind of his bedrock, was that what he called voluntary generosity was our best social safety net. And you could see he was writing letters to the editor or going to Reform Party conventions when he was 17 years old, you know, before he could vote, before he had started university. And some of the things he was arguing then are almost verbatim what you'll hear him arguing now. So you could never accuse him of being sort of a turncoat or a shapeshifter in his beliefs. They've been sort of almost strangely eerily consistent from his very young life through, you know, his 20-year plus political career in Parliament.
That is really interesting. And Shannon, what did he tell you about growing up in the 80s when Pierre Elliott Trudeau brought in the National Energy Program?
Yeah, this was interesting. So he talked about sort of the scarring effect, his perception of the National Energy Program. And I sort of had a moment where I kind of paused. And I think I can't remember if I asked for clarification or if he just offered it, because we're almost exactly the same age. And I don't think I was processing in the 80s things that were happening through a political lens. Mm-hmm. And he said it was this, and this made sense. I kind of got this. He said, you know, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand the intricacies of the program. I just knew that everyone around me was very stressed, very angry. You know, that was a very alienating program for Western Canada and sort of sowed a lot of seeds of Western alienation that we would see driving federal politics in Canada right up until the present day. And he said his own family, they didn't, you know, lose their house or experience very direct, visceral financial ruin from it. But they had to move to a smaller place. He sort of said just the cost of living being very high. And this kind of planted seeds of a really, really strong a visceral sense of Ottawa should keep its fat fingers over in Ottawa and out of the rest of the country. And again, you can see that his his real core issues are always about smaller government, less spending, more sense of responsibility, and turning over more to citizens to handle on their own. And now there's always a question when someone becomes a high-level national politician, whether they're reverse engineering their biography to fit into their beliefs or vice versa. But as I said, his beliefs are so consistent and they're on the record with, you know, he wrote an essay to enter an as prime minister contest when he was about 19 or 20 years old. And some of the passages in there are verbatim the speech he made when he pitched himself running for conservative leader and for prime minister. So there's enough on the record that you can see that authentically he's been beating the same drums for like 25 years.
We're listening to Shannon Proudfoot, who did an extended interview with Pierre Poilievre for McLean's article back in 2022. Our other guest on Ask Me Anything is Stephanie Levitz. Both of them work for the Globe and Mail. And I think what I'll do during the program is put the political questions more to you, Stephanie, and Shannon, questions about Pierre Poilievre, the person, a little bit more to you, although either of you can jump in any time. And Stephanie, I think our first caller has a question that you'll be perfect to answer. Cal Labadie is in Toronto. Hi, Cal.
Hi, Ian.
What's your question for our Ask Me Anything?
I'm one of those Canadians who are undecided. There is quite a number of issues that I disagree with Trudeau, but so far, I still don't know what Poilievre thinks. He talks a lot. Everything comes down to the carbon tax. He keeps pushing for an election as soon as possible. But there is no program. There is no detail. I don't know what the guy is running on. It's disrespectful. I'm one of those guys who run on issues. I voted in the past for Liberals. I also voted for Conservatives. I'd like to know what does Pierre Poilievre has to offer to enable me to make a decision. But by avoiding to show up to interviews or to programs or to answer and give any specifics, I think that either he's has no plan or he's lying. Either one of them is not acceptable and will push me to vote for the other guy.
Cal, stay on the line. Stephanie Levitz, has Pierre Poilievre said enough publicly so that you and other reporters on the Hill know what he would do as prime minister?
Well, it depends on which issue set you're looking at, right? I mean, Pierre Poilievre has boiled down everything that he is sort of running on for Canadians right now into four very distinct, catchy slogans that he repeats and repeats and repeats. And they have to do with eliminating the consumer price on carbon, getting more homes built in this country, making Canada a safer place by reducing crime levels, and fixing the budget, which is sort of a catch-all where he talks about cutting wasteful government spending and so on and so forth. What's interesting about within those four buckets, in certain buckets, he has a little bit more detail. Like on crime, for example, he wants to reform laws so that it's harder for somebody to get bail. On building homes, he actually has a very detailed policy agenda. He even introduced it as a piece of legislation in the House of Commons that he argues would get more homes built faster in this country. He contrasts that with the Liberal government approach. Where things get tricky for Mr. Poilievre, and I can empathize with Cal here, is that beyond those issue sets, and you can add a few more to those, he has, you know, been very outspoken in the last, I'd say, about 18 months on the issue of the toxic drug crisis and what he thinks is or isn't helping that problem. He has taken on some other elements of crime. But if you're looking to Mr. Poilievre and wondering, what is your foreign policy? What is your worldview on Canada's place in the world? What would you do with defense and the military? How about that? What about veterans? What about relations with Quebec? What about Indigenous Canadians and what those relationships look like? He has not presented an overarching narrative on those things. And he would argue at this moment in time, he doesn't have to. He is currently the opposition leader. His job is to hold the government to account. He does not need to be held accountable for his policy positions. I strenuously disagree with that point, as do many journalists. He is still an elected politician who wants to run the country. And his folks and everybody around him say, all in good time, all in good time, all in good time. When there's an election, you'll have more answers. I don't know whether or not that's going to be true.
And our next caller is Ruben Gregg, who's in Vancouver. Hi, Ruben.
Yeah, my question is based on a conversation I had with a friend of mine who called Poilievre a career politician. So I guess my question is, if he is, how might that impact him as a person, and how does he compare to someone who isn't?
Mm-hmm. All right, Ruben, thank you very much for the question. I'm going to play traffic cop on this program, and I won't always get it right, but let me put that question to Shannon Proudfoot. I guess part of it is empirical and part of it is more of analysis. Is Pierre Poilievre, Shannon, a career politician?
Yeah, I think that it's a good question, and I think the answer to it is undoubtedly true on both of those fronts. My favorite little anecdote that I dug up when I was writing about him was that he was 24 when he was first elected to the House of Commons, and he's now been reelected 7 times to represent the same riding. And he was so young when he was first elected that his birthday, I think, fell right before the election, and there were some volunteers on his campaign who bought him some clothes and bought him a grown-up worker because he still looked like a university student going out knocking doors. So that tells you something. If you think about, you know, how much you yourself changed between sort of your early to mid 20s and wherever you land in life 20 years later, it's a lot. But I think it is true in the literal facts of his biography, and also sort of more psychographically, I suppose, in the way he operates. He is a consummate political animal. You know, as Steph has alluded to, he is very good at politics. It's a bit reductive to talk about politics as, you know, a sport or a war or a game, but he is very good at the skill of it and the cut and thrust and back and forth. It takes obvious relish in really cutting people off at the knees in the House of Commons, and again, is good at it. So it's not just that the arc of his life, and he's had almost no private sector work experience. I think he had a brief internship. He worked as an assistant in Stockwell Day's office and immediately kind of vaulted into working in politics in some capacity as a really young man. But it's also that he just is that creature. He inhabits that role entirely, and that is who he is, which gets sort of interesting when you think about how all of his current, the kind of energy behind his, I don't know if you call it a campaign, but the energy behind who he is and what he's saying about where Canada needs to go right now is very explicitly anti-elite and anti sort of, you know, those snotty people who know what's right for us and they want to take control of our lives. Because you could argue that someone who makes, you know, $250,000 a year or whatever it is that MPs make and has been since he was 25 in the halls of power is himself sort of an elite, but he has really succeeded in harnessing that anti-elite energy and positioning himself as representing people who are sort of forgotten and people who get looked down other people's noses at.
And Mike Juhas is in Owen Sound. Hi, Mike.
Hi there.
What's your question about Pierre Poilievre?
My question revolves around sort of related to the Harper government. There's a book written, an expose on sort of the ties to Christian nationalism and really extreme fundamentalist views in the Reform Party. And I'm curious how much of an influence or how tied still is Pierre Poilievre to that sort of reform movement with harsh stances on reproductive rights and, you know, marriage equality, et cetera, like that.
Yeah. Stephanie Levitz, can I put that question to you?
Sure. I mean, so the Conservatives will say that their party is a big tent party and there's room within what they refer to as the big blue tent for people who hold all sorts of different views on all sorts of different issues, both economic and social. And there is definitely remains different groups, smaller groups within that big blue tent that have more socially conservative views. There are some who hold, for example, socially conservative views on abortion, although are very, in fact, supportive of LGBTQ rights and gay marriage. And, you know, they've really moved forward on that conversation, let's say. There are folks that are, you know, very, very connected to their faith, and they believe that their particular stream of faith is doesn't support LGBTQ rights, does not support a woman's right to be able to access an abortion. They exist. They are all within the party. And the Conservatives will look at that and they will say, that is because this is a democracy. People should not be penalized or made to feel less than other because of their own personal ideologies. The second part of that question, though, you have to ask is how much power do these particular groups of people with these ideologies have over Pierre Poilievre? Because this is a concern that gets raised a lot about him, specifically from the liberals, specifically from more progressive quarters in this country, that a Pierre Poilievre government would roll back women's rights, that they would punitively act on LGBTQ freedoms, I believe that Mr. Polyev has such a commanding majority within his party. He won leadership so definitively that while there was a time where all of these smaller factions exerted a lot of power because of their organizational prowess, their ability to get people out to vote, their ability to raise money, they do not have the same kind of power that they do now. As to whether Mr. Polyev himself is connected to any of these people, I can't speak to that. I don't know the nature of every single personal connection he has. But certainly as it relates to his views, he has been, I think at this point, fairly definitive that he is, you know, he is self-described as pro-choice. He advocates, you know, he supports LGBTQ rights. Does he advocate for them? That's a different question. But his views are certainly, I would say, more progressively social than some folks in the party.
Our next caller is in Edmonton, Douglas Peer. Hi, Douglas.
Oh, hi, Ian, and hello to your guests. Well, I started off with a pretty basic question, which I think most Canadians are asking, which party would be better for the economy? When I say which party, I'm referring to the Conservatives and the Liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And what is each party's plan to deal with this catastrophe, which is real, global warming?
Mm-hmm. So, Douglas, thank you very much for your call. This is the question that I want to put to Stephanie Levitz. Doug was asking, what is Pierre Polyev's plan to deal with global warming? Do we know, Stephanie?
Right. So Mr. Polyev, he bundles, again, he loves slogans, things that rhyme, alliteration. So his climate change policy right now is summed up in this little phrase, technology, not taxes. And you may ask, what does that mean? And he'll say that we can address climate change, which he believes is real and which he believes is man-made. We can address it not by using market-based pricing like the consumer price on carbon, by using and supporting more technologies that help bring down emissions, that help, you know, change our reliance on oil and gas to a certain extent. He is not by any means talking about, you know, peak oil, end of oil, no. But, you know, certainly talking about making the oil and gas sector more environmentally friendly. Things he doesn't say that we don't know. We don't know, for example, exactly how he's going to approach the industrial price on carbon, because really it is big industry that are the biggest emitters in this country. And there is also a federal backstop, an industrial price on carbon. Most of the provinces have their own industrial system. The reason they do is that they didn't. Ottawa would do it for them. So sometimes he has said, you know, well, you know, there isn't a federal industrial carbon price, excuse me. The provinces have one, but the provinces only have one because Ottawa makes them do it. So if Ottawa wasn't making them do it, would the provinces do it? Mr. Polyev is silent on that question. He is silent on the question of carbon emissions targets. So as you know, the whole world at various stages has agreed to reduce emissions below a certain level by a certain time. Everybody routinely blows right past those. They're not met for lots of different reasons, but it's sort of a generally accepted international principle at the moment that we are all going to agree to these targets. And he argues, he hasn't said whether he would set targets, which targets, what would he attach, like what would be the metric of success on this front. So we don't really know about that. We know that he doesn't really like paper straws and we'll probably deal with that one.
Yes.
And I'm not actually trying to be cavalier here. I guess what I'm saying is that he has interestingly approached environmental policy and climate change. Again, it's like, does anything you're being asked to do to help the environment make your life worse? Well, that's Justin Trudeau's fault, and I'm going to undo it. We don't hear the high-level sort of existential crisis part of it.
The two of you were perfect guests for our Ask Me Anything. Also, just fantastic to talk to two smart, thoughtful journalists who I've not had the opportunity to interview before. So thank you very much for taking up our invitation.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for your questions.
Shannon Proudfoot, a feature writer at The Globe and Mail, and Stephanie Levitz, a senior politics reporter at The Globe, and we reached both of them in Ottawa. That was a portion of Cross Country Checkup's AMA about Pierre Polyev. Our AMA guests were Shannon Proudfoot, a feature writer at The Globe and Mail, and Stephanie Levitz, a senior politics reporter also at The Globe. You can listen to the show live on CBC Radio 1 or on the CBC News app. Just go to the local tab and press play wherever you are. If you'd like to listen to the full two-hour edition of Cross Country Checkup, you can stream the podcast on the CBC Listen app. And if you'd like to share comments or appear on a future show, go to cbc.ca/aircheck. I'm Ian Hanna-Mansing. Thanks for listening. The next live edition of Checkup airs on CBC Radio, CBC News Network, and CBC News Explorer next Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.